Welcome to Does the Team Think with Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. Hello to you, Mrs. Shirley Cook. Mrs. Shirley Cook, let's have your question, please.
Does the team think that talking to plants helps the plants to grow? And if so, what would they say?
Does the team think that talking to plants helps the plants to grow? And if so, what would they say?
Of course I do it every time. What I do when I put a plant in is I say, there you are, grow your little basket.
Grow in your little basket. Cyril, you've got it wrong.
I talk to the trees, they're coming to take me away.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it makes you grow. I mean, people often talk to me and look what I am.
You see, they usually, whatever they say goes over your head, doesn't it?
That's rather clever.
Yes,
I wish I could see it.
Don't have to remind me when I've been clever, I always know.
Well, there was a fella, you know, and he was told about this talking to the plants to make them grow, and it was no good. He tried it, so he told his friend about it, and his friend said, the trouble with your garden, he said, the trouble with everybody these days, all we want is a shower of rain. Why don't you go home, offer up a little prayer to heaven, get a little short, sharp shower.
Short, sharp shower.
Like us.
And
he's a short, sharp shower, actually.
Well, I'm short and sharp, but I'm not a shower. But
George.
Anyway, he went home, and he there was nobody about, so he got down in the garden, he closed his eyes, put his hands together, and started up a little prayer for a little short, sharp shower. And his wife came in, saw him there with his eyes closed on the ground, muttering. She thought, hello, Fred's drunk again. So she got a bucket of water, crept behind him. She did. Just as he was saying, oh, Lord, do send a few drops of rain. And she chucked the bucket over. So he got up, dusted himself down, looked up to heaven and said, of course, that's ridiculous.
Yes, and tell me, Arthur, when she threw the bucket, did he turn a little pale? Now,
Jim, you haven't said a word.
Well, it's one of those questions, you see. I try and maintain my dignity when I think the question is a load of rubbish. And I don't like to say anything that might hurt the lady when I think that she must be an idiot if she believes this. But I'm desperately trying not to say anything hurting to you, Mrs.
Shirley. You've just called her an idiot, but you're
no,
not
I
hurting
didn't.
Her.
I said she must be an
oh,
idiot.
Oh, she must
I didn't
be.
Say she was.
Oh, I see.
But, I mean, can you imagine anybody in their right mind, a grown-up, an educated person with a brain, which, thank heavens, we've been endowed with, standing over a plant saying, grow,
no.
You must grow, you must grow.
No.
You'd be certified in a minute.
No,
Jim, you'd be surprised what they say back.
Well, what would you say to a convolvulus?
Well, do you know what I would say?
What would you say to a stick of rhubarb?
You'd say, I walk out into my garden every morning and I say, hi, Dranger.
Oh, dear.
I walk out into my garden every night and something awful happens.
I know, you fall over.
I know what you do.
My bank manager.
You have your rhododendrons to grow, or your hollyhocks.
No, this is, I can't reach the hollyhocks.
Mrs. Cook, are you a person who talks to plants?
Yes.
You are. What do you say to them, Mrs.
Cook? Now listen to her.
Now let's listen to Mrs. Cook. Mrs. Cook, what do you say to them?
I just go in every morning and I say, oh, you look lovely today.
And what do
funny
they?
Funny thing, they all say that to me
They're
in the morning.
They're all growing lovely.
Yeah. I know a pansy who'd love to meet you.
Listen, what do you say to them when they're dead?
Oh, that's a shame. I throw them away.
Well, there you are.
Well, throw them away. Don't give them a decent burial.
Mrs. Cook, can you recommend any statement that the team might make to flowers to encourage them to grow?
Just tell them that they look very nice.
Well, supposing they don't.
Well ignore them.
Wait a minute.
Well,
it's like people
saying to you, you had a good turn, Jim. You know, you've got a kid along somewhere along the line.
Let Mrs. Cook have her say.
Most plants do look nice if you look at them in the right way.
You mean, if you've got rose-tinted glasses like you have and obviously a bit of a nit, I mean, you are...
I should ask from the beginning, you?
Jim, did you hear what Mrs. Cook said?
She was getting back at me, wasn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she said it takes one to recognise one.
Mrs. Cook, you asked Jim what he says to his moustache to make it grow.
Well, I don't, you see. I mean, it just, my mind actually boggles at this because, I mean, you stick a seed in the ground and water it and it'll come up without a word from anybody. You don't have to go out there and mooch over
it. It ain't necessarily so.
If Mrs. Cook has this lovely fairy-like attitude towards
life, if she enjoys it, yes.
Why not?
Of course,
we all have our own kicks.
We all have our own little scruples. I mean, foibles.
Yeah. And you can get ointment for it.
Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you, Mrs. Cook. Thank you very much. Team, Mr. Kenneth S. Allen has sat down on my right. He is now putting this question to you. Listen carefully, here it comes.
If the team could go back and intervene in some great historical event, what would it be and how would they change things?
If the team could go back and intervene in some great historical event, what would it be and how would they change things?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd like to see us lose the last war, then the Germans would be skinned and we'd be rich.
Very good.
Well, I'd like to have been with Guy Fawkes in the Houses of Parliament and shown him how to do it properly.
Cyril Fletcher.
Well, I think I speak on behalf of all comedians when I say that I would like to have been there and to have stopped Queen Victoria when she said, "We are not amused."
Oh!
Yes.
I was there at the time.
Wait. Actually, I suppose you were the act that
I
she
was
said
the
it to.
Actually, Cyril, she did come to the first recording of Does the Team Think, and that's where she said it. Jimmy.
Well, that's
is he trying to be rude to us?
Yes, I succeeded.
No, it's a rather feeble of attempt. I mean, we know we're all a bit long in the tooth, but don't be stupid about Queen Victoria. I mean, we all know she'd been dead and buried before we were ever resuscitated.
No.
It just happened naturally.
I don't want to pick a quarrel with the chairman, but come outside.
Yes, sir.
No, I mean, it's a bit much, because he's older than all of us. The funny thing is...
No,
listen,
he's not older than all of us.
He is.
He just looks older than all of us.
Mr. Allen, have you any thoughts about changing history?
Well, yes, I think the team could do pretty well on that. And Jimmy, I feel, would have been of great assistance to Boadicea. He would have loved the ponies.
You don't know what?
Boadicea.
She's the world's worst driver. She's got her left hand out and she's turning right.
Yes, that's why she probably needed him. Arthur perhaps would have been very useful as a spy during the Napoleonic Wars, over listening perhaps to Napoleon and Josephine plotting while he was walking about underneath the bed, of course.
We've got him. Now we're back to the...
Now, that's only a pose. Oh.
Funny name for it, isn't it? Plotting.
Oh, that's
true. You know something? It's a strange thing how these pages of history have subconsciously changed our lives, the whole course of our lives. For instance, you see, some famous men in history, leave behind them names that we use in everyday life. For instance, Wellington, and they say Wellies. Now, if Napoleon had won that, we'd all be wearing nappies.
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mr. Kenneth Allen. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mrs. Joyce Glendinning is sitting beside me. Mrs. Gloyce Jen...
talking to the flowers again.
All right. Mrs. Joyce Glendinning will now put this question to you, team. Here it is.
If members of the team see a beautiful girl at a party, how do they attract her attention? And what topic of conversation do they pursue to keep her interest?
If members of the team see a beautiful girl at a party... How do they attract her attention, and what topic of conversation do they pursue to keep her interest?
Well, if it was this lady, I'd know, wouldn't I? Let's have, how's your muck spreading going on with that?
My scene is slightly more sophisticated. I would dash across the room with a light for a cigarette, and then I'd say, "Excuse me, may I inflame you?"
Well, I
should. That's the worst joke I've ever heard.
Well, yeah, mine.
All right.
Don't you ever listen to your own?
No, I can't stand it. I'm too busy talking to the flowers.
Hello there.
Arthur Askey.
Oh, well, I should just wave to the girl. Mind you, be careful what I wave to her, but I should wave to the young lady across the crowded room.
But would they see you, Arthur?
Well, you could, eh?
You'd have to stand on a chair to wave.
No, it's not necessarily. No, I go to the dwarf's ball every year.
Oh, yes. Are they holding a dwarf's ball this year?
Anyway, they...
Well, you see, the premise of this question is wrong. This lady says, how would you attract the girl's attention. When I go to the sort of party that she's talking about, I am already the centre of attraction myself.
Of course, when you're drunk with bicycle clips on, you must be.
The trouble is, it's bicycle clips and no trousers, usually.
I'll tell you when Jimmy's a big success.
He still has his bicycle clips.
He's a big success on the 5th of November. Gee. They're all round him. Well, I met a girl outside a taxi and I said, do you or don't you? She said, not as a rule, but you talked me into it. A taxi, of course.
So I was at this party the other day and I saw this beautiful girl and all the young chaps around and I thought, well, I must do something sort of sophisticated and, you know, soigné. And draw her into my circle, you see. So I went across and said, how'd you like a pint of brown ale?
She said, your circle? Pint of brown ale?
She said, I'll have it in one of your boots, Jim.
Mrs. Glendinning, how would you expect these gentlemen, perhaps on the team, to keep your attention?
I think men like women to be good listeners, don't they? So I would leave the conversation to them.
Yeah, I've met my missus.
I think if I met Ted Ray, we could always talk about his violin. Sorry, violin.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad. That's not bad. Highly strong, but not bad.
The only listening that Ted's wife does is through the keyhole. Sorry, keep going.
She'll get an earful one day, you see.
Old radio programmes, I'm very fond of them. We could perhaps talk about that. And Cyril Fletcher, poetry, of course. He's the cultured one, isn't he?
How lovely. I never knew you'd get.
That's only a veneer. That's a bit of varnish. I usually say to a strange lady, we get into conversation, and I start to talk, as Jimmy says, about the cultural things and say, do you etch? And she may say, yes. And I say, well, scratch.
Mrs. Glendinning, carry on.
Of course, if she's a belly dancer.
What a funny voice Mrs. Glendinning has got.
She's a ventriloquist.
Mrs. Glendinning.
I'm not a belly dancer. Arthur Askey, I think I would perhaps sympathise with him about the problems of being short and plump, as I am.
Get someone to help.
He's not plump.
I'm plump. No! My girdle must be riding, isn't it?
No, you see, I usually... One of the finest openings, you know, it's the opening gambit.
Gambit.
The gambit.
I know that, yes.
So you see this gem, this pearl in the corner, and you walk over to her and say...
Hello, Rita.
No, you say, hello, do you hunt?
What's that? And she gives you the brush. Very good, sir.
No, you see, and if she says no, you say, well, it's about time you started, or something like that. I don't know, really.
What do you play, hunt the slipper?
No. Then you say, well, perhaps if you don't hunt, you play polo, or something like that.
That's right.
Probably what they most of all like to hear is how gallant one was during the war, something like that, you know, you describe.
Well, you did your bit, Jimmy.
I know, she was a lovely girl. I saw her,
yes.
Very much, team. Thank you, Mrs. Glendinning. Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, a young man who's made a big impact on the comedy scene in the last few years. Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome for Mike Reed. Welcome to the program, Mike. Take a seat, courage in both hands, and put your question, please.
Gentlemen, most comedians these days would like to record romantic songs. Has the team ever had the urge?
Most comedians these days want to record romantic songs. Have the team ever had the urge?
Can I have the first go at this?
Yes.
Would you three like to go and sit it out? Well, I had a long contract in the 40s with HMV, and they thought they could make a male Gracie Fields out of me. In other words, in addition to singing, you all remember the B song? Yes. Would you like a couple of choruses? Well, anyway, I sang the bee and the moth and the seagull, and eventually I was getting through, and the head said to me, you know, Arthur, you've got quite a good singing voice. We think we can make a Gracie Fields out of you. Sing, let's try you with a couple of ballads. So they turned up two ballads. The first one was called I'm Sending a Letter to Santa Claus. I had to sing this straight. I'm sending a letter to Santa Claus. Oh. And the other side, believe it or not, was I Remember You. I Remember You. Not that one. This was I Remember You, My Darling.
And the orchestra fell about laughing. We had to have 84 goes at it. I made this one record. I've still got a copy. The BBC have still got a copy, but they didn't sell the other eight.
Ted Ray.
Yes, well, I have a rather good sort of bathroom voice, you know. When I belt it out, you know, occasionally, I can let go with a pretty good sort of tenor voice. And if you'd like to hear me sing something, I challenge Mike Reed to mention the song and I will sing it right here and now.
What's the song?
What would you like me to sing, Mike? Any song you like.
Any song I like.
Anyone you like.
Oh, Mike. My Papa.
Thanks very much. I said that well, didn't I?
Why you speak... Pardon?
I heard you singing the other morning in
the
bar.
Wait a minute, I haven't started yet.
I'm just...
Ted, you may have a bathroom. You may have a bathroom voice, but you'll get nowhere without a few plugs.
Well, as a matter of fact...
Don't sponge on anybody.
No, but I'm trying to get this...
Oh, don't be a loser.
You ready?
Ted, yeah. What are you going to do?
I'm going to sing...
Oh, my papa!
If you'd have been I'm my father, I'd have shot myself.
Ted Ray.
Oh, my papa, to me you are so wonderful.
All right, Ted.
No, I was in playing with my rubber duck in the bath the other morning, Mike, and Pete Murray put one of your records. My Old Dutch.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that it?
Yeah.
And Mike has recently made a couple of records, and so have I, though they have not yet reached the ears of the public. To any
They've not
step.
Been released.
But they are not. They don't come under the category of romantic songs. I mean, I've written one called Time, Gentlemen, Please, which is a sad song. I've recently written and sung another one called An Empty Glass, which is another very sad song.
It would be quite ridiculous. Be quite ridiculous for Arthur, for instance, to sing Walk Tall.
Oh, I can sing that.
And as an encore, I've grown accustomed to her knees.
You've got the two mixed up because I always used to sing when I was with Val Doonican. Walk tall and look the whole world in the shin.
Do you finish your act on a song?
I do, yes, Jimmy.
What do you
sing?
Well, usually I'll sing a number with these hands. It's a, you know, romantic
one of those dirty songs.
No, it's not. No, one really
no because you need no. hands.
Nothing like the act.
Jim finishes his song on Handel's Lager.
No, but I mean...
I wrote a couple of nice songs.
That isn't romantic.
Team, you're all talking at once.
A very romantic song I wrote.
Yes, what was it?
I used to kiss my girl on the lips, but now it's all over.
I heard a fellow at the City of Varieties Leeds once sing a romantic song. It was about the parts of your body. We all know what our eyes and ears and nose are for. We know what our arms and legs are for as well. But the finish was marvellous. He sang, but the dimple in your tummy is just to hold the salt and pepper when you're eating fish and chips in bed.
You know, I bet you've... funny you should mention you call it the dimple in your tummy in that sort of naive, coy way. It's your belly button you're talking about, isn't it?
I remember an old serio comic, that is a lady singer of ballads on the music halls years ago, and she came on the stage, she was past her best, she was my age, you know, and she was singing there, and they couldn't hear her in the gallery. They started booing and hissing her and throwing pennies, and a fellow in the front row of the stalls got very embarrassed. He stood up, and he shouted to them, give the old cow a chance. And she said, thank goodness there's one gentleman in the audience.
Thank you, team, very much. Thank you, Mike Reed.
Thank you
very much. Have enjoyed it. Thank you, Mike.
Nice timing. Thank you, Mike.
Hello, Mike. Come again, Mike.
And as Mike Reed fades slowly in the west, we turn our attention to Mrs. Margaret Honeyman. Mrs. Honeyman, welcome to the programme. Can we have a question from you, please?
If the members of the team had the Royal Albert Hall at their disposal for an evening, what kind of entertainment would they choose to do?
If members of the team had the Royal Albert Hall at their disposal for an evening, what kind of entertainment would they choose to do?
You should explain to listeners in Tanzania and places like that that it's a very big hall.
It's a very beautiful building.
It's a rotunda, actually.
I know, and it's round as well.
I wonder how many of this panel have actually appeared in the
I have.
I have.
I have. We all have.
I've appeared.
This lady has.
Honeyman has.
That's why she asked the question.
Now let's find out.
Mrs. Honeyman.
Mrs.
Sorry.
Honeyman, first of all.
Jimmy, behave yourself.
She's the lady that sweeps the stage. Mrs. Honeyman, please. Let's find out. What did you do at the Albert Hall?
Well, if the members of the team have finished...
Yeah,
she didn't say are finished.
Ted Ray would like to do, or Arthur Askey. I was lucky enough to sing with a choir.
With a choir.
Are you a soprano?
Not quite so high.
Well, I was a soprano until my folks got worried about it.
And the neighbours started talking.
Do you know, I tell you a funny thing about the Albert Hall... And this is absolutely true.
Of course it is.
Uncle Reuben told you.
No. Uncle Reuben had nothing to do with it. I was in the Albert Hall, and there was a boxing match on. And on the walls, it had all these notices. Betting strictly prohibited. And there's a fellow next to me shouting, "Oh, it's 6-4 to Darkie. 6-4 to Darkie. Come on, I want 6-4. Who wants him?" I said, "Excuse me, sir." I said, "Sir, you know, he's a bigger man than I was." I said, "Have you seen that betting strictly prohibited?" He said, "Ah, that's only for Gilbert and Sullivan."
And they were the next fight, weren't they?
I was in the Albert Hall for a concert one time, and they were playing that Beethoven music. I think it's the overture to Fidelio or something, where there's a sudden chord and there's a trumpet in the distance.
That's right.
And it was the approaching coach, it is actually. Anyway, they sent this, the rehearsal, this trumpeter up into one of those
boxes.
Not boxes, entrances, right up at the top, so that there'd be, it'll sound in the distance. And it got to this chord, and very pianissimo, and all you could hear was, "You can't go in here, there's a concert going on in here."
Thank you, Mrs. Margaret Honeyman. And now, team, welcome to Mr. Noel F. Henkel. Mr. Henkel, welcome to the programme. And now that you are seated, may we have your question, please?
Does the team think that the old saying, "A kiss without a moustache is like an egg without any salt," is a valid statement of fact?
Does the team think that the old saying, "A kiss without a moustache is like an egg without any salt," is a valid statement of fact?
I think that I would like to speak on behalf of the team here, Mr. Henkel, and say that we don't go around kissing a lot of men with moustaches.
Well, I don't know. I kissed a girl the other night, and I might as well have been kissing a man. She had a lovely moustache. And she had a hairy chest, so they tell me.
Well, I must say that it would be an unenviable task for me, because we'd probably get entangled together.
I think men grow moustaches. It's chiefly men who have bad teeth.
Now,
Jimmy hasn't. He's got a lovely top set. I haven't seen his bottom, but he's got a lovely...
Let's just make it quite obvious to the listeners that Mr. Henkel shares the same type of moustache as Mr.
We don't share it. We've got our own.
Well, his looks like a cutting from one of yours. Well, when I was a little boy in Liverpool, must be 10 or 12 years ago now, I went to the circus and I fell in love with a bearded lady. But I couldn't find it.
I can call Mr. Henkel Noel because he and I have known each other for
years. He keeps getting his mates.
As a matter of fact, he and I started the Handlebar Club together, didn't we?
Were you a pilot, Jim, in the war?
Yes.
Well, what did you do?
I pilot here and pilot there.
I was back on the farm.
No, as we all know, I was in the Air Force when Pontius was a pilot, but never mind.
What do you phone him, mate?
Noel and I started a thing called the Handlebar Club.
Did you really?
Yeah. That accounts for the fact that Mr. Henkel has hirsute appendages almost matching yours.
Yes. And he will remember that the rule... Don't interrupt, Noel. He will remember that the rule that I laid down was that the moustache should be of reasonable proportions, a hirsute appendage of reasonable proportions with graspable extremities. And that's what we have to have.
Now, how
reasonable proportion. Look at it. You can hardly get on the same panel with it.
You look as if you're looking at us through a hedge.
When he's in a taxi, they don't know which way he's turning.
I'm your chap. Mr. Hank, I must tell you this, Matt. I'm your chap who had this very, very long moustache, and when he went to the pictures, the people behind him used to object to it. So he used to stick the ends in his ears. And then when he sneezed, they flew out and hit the people on either side.
What a lie.
No matter how grouchy you're feeling, you'll find a moustache very healing. It grows in a wreath all around the front teeth, thus preserving the face from congealing.
That's nice.
But you see, Noel used to be, I don't know whether he's now, a great pint of beer drinker, a great pint drinker, wasn't he? Left-handed, if I remember.
Well,
because you were standing on his right, that's why.
No, that's not right, Ted. He had a left-handed tanker.
One of the great things about the moustache is you get a second crack at every drink you have. I mean, let's just take a referendum on this. Do you ladies prefer with or without? With, yes. Yes. A moustache, with a moustache.
One lady in the audience.
One lady, that's right.
No wonder you like it, you've got one.
So if I said against moustaches, it would be how many? All of them.
All of them. Even the men, look.
I think that's rotten. I must confess that if I were a woman, if I were a lady, and somebody like me approached me, if you know what I mean, with a moustache full of beer and marmalade.
You'd say it's hardly possible.
I would be a mite repelled, especially as I don't eat marmalade.
Makes you shiver.
You know, I saw Jim sneeze once, and do you know what came out?
No.
A big bad mouse.
Thank you, team, and there I'm afraid we must close. That's the team think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Mike Reed. This is Donald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.